The Voyager planet is similar in size to asteroid Steins, which is 6.6 kilometers wide at its largest, just over 4 miles. Spherical planet with complex ring system, lumpy asteroid. But the same scale? Something seems up here. After all, this planet is only twice as wide as Manhattan.
All right,
the
stop it. That's all I can take. That's all I can take. Let's go, 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 go.
Enjoy.
Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so you can watch the stuff you love when you want, where you want, on whatever damn device you choose. I'm Tom Merritt. Brian Brushwood, planets on television may appear larger than they do in your rearview mirror.
Tom, this showed up on dig.com recently. Do you remember that episode of The Simpsons where Homer has to explain Poochie to a bunch of basement-dwelling nerds, and they say, like, in episode 235, the scale goes up and yet the notes go down. What is that with those bones? Is it some kind of magical xylophone?
Yes.
This is that video made real in real life. Basically, somebody noticed that in the opening credit sequence to Star Trek Voyager, you can see a reflection of the Voyager on the rings of the planet around it that has the scale screwed up. But since there are technical manuals that release the size of Voyager, they use that as a yardstick, and then they figure out that a gas giant ringed planet therefore must be 6 kilometers wide, and on it goes on forever. We picked it. That was 5 seconds that felt like 5 years. That was less than 1% of the entire video. It's insane.
On the one hand, guys, it's the credit sequence. It's just art. It's not supposed to be realistic science fiction. On the other hand, kind of admire the dedication to the bit there.
As I was watching it, I was just like, man, just wait till this guy sees Rick and Morty. It's all over.
Pickle Rick! Hey, joining us today, we're very excited to have Mikey Newman back on the show. How's it
Hello.
Going, Mikey?
I'm doing very good. I'm happy to be here. Cutting cords.
That's right.
Americans style intro.
real quick, can we plug the Patreon on your channel right up front? If you're not familiar, Movies with Mikey is the best show some of you guys are not watching. We need to fix that. If you go to patreon.com/moviewithmikey, you can contribute, get, I assume, early things. I don't know, some kind of benefits. But some of the most insightful, joyful reviews of things we all love on all of the internet right now. Definitely check out Movies with Mikey.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind. I've been on this Patreon journey for, I guess, like a month and a half now. That makes your heart palpitate sometimes because you go up and down. Like they don't necessarily warn you about how that's going to fluctuate based on for perfectly understandable reasons. It's still very scary though when it takes a swing.
Well, especially because odds are that if you're on Patreon, it's because you're in a place where you're making a big leap and you're trying to make something big happen in your life. And so you watch those numbers very, very closely. And I would say now we're, what, 2.5 years in, Tom, and finally I'm relaxing a little bit?
Three and a half years in. Can you believe that?
Yes. It has not been 3.5 years.
It has been.
Yeah.
Oh, we're old. Thank you, everyone who keeps us alive.
Oh, so old. And you guys are the best. And because you're supporting all of us on Patreon, we can now talk about our primary target. Oh, wait. Patreon fluctuated. Now we can't. Oh, wait. It fluctuated again. Now we can.
Well, welcome to
Netflix.
Patreon target.
Netflix acquired Miller World, or as I said on Daily Tech News Show this morning, Millar World, an independent comic publishing company founded by Mark and Lucy Miller, creators of Kick-Ass and Kingsman, among other things. Mark Miller was also behind the comic series Old Man Logan, which was the inspiration for the movie Logan. Netflix plans to bring more of Miller's work to the screen. This is the first big acquisition for Netflix, Brian.
Yeah. Wait. The first. Oh, I guess so. I didn't think about it in terms of acquisitions because of course they have deals with Marvel.
They've commissioned things. They've bought shows, but they've never acquired a company on the scale.
Man, I really wonder what happens behind the scenes on this thing. I would imagine there's a number of meetings where This is an awesome talent acquisition kind of thing, because including, you know, themes of Marvel's Civil War and all that come from, this is a talented writer who knows how to tell really good stories. I gotta think that it's more just getting that person and storytelling skills on the team.
Both of them, Mark and Lucy Miller, are both amazing.
Correct. But specifically, I suspect this is less about the value of the properties that they already own and more about the talent acquisition. Do you think that's a good guess? You know more about this than I do, Mikey. What do you think?
The terms of the deal are very important, because it probably acquires any latent non-licensed products, which are probably some of the comics we just saw are not up as part of that deal, but also Kick-Ass and, I mean, anything Miller did with Marvel. Like, there's so many things not on the table and not knowing what they got, basically. Because I can see a Kick-Ass show or something. Like, well, Wanted, that was grabbed. Like, there's so many things that are theirs that they own that I don't know where those licenses currently stand.
Well, yeah, and it's not impossible to find it, because Netflix acquired Millerworld. So everything that Millerworld owns, now Netflix owns.
Unless there's existing contracts.
It's those things that Miller worked on for other people that Millerworld doesn't own, that it's kind of like, well, wait a minute. Did Miller contract, or does he have a right to that? Does Netflix then get a piece of that? Well, that's interesting.
I think that's why I'm tempted to believe this is more of a talent play, because I don't care about what music's in your back catalog. If you have a history of making number one hits that are making billions of dollars for the likes of Disney's, then I want you on my team. And if I could do that for the cost of buying your company, which again, we don't know. I don't think the details are out on any of this stuff. That seems to me like that'd be a pretty smart decision.
Oh, this is definitely both. I mean, I have no doubt that Netflix wants to be able to have access to all of Millerworld's back catalog and turn it into content. But you're absolutely right. That does not preclude the fact that Netflix is also saying, and we would like you to come up with some new stuff that we could put on Netflix as well.
Yeah. So how many more of these do you think we're looking at? And is this going to be the start of another Monopoly game where everybody
before we get there, I think it'll be interesting to see what Netflix does with this. They've been very conservative about acquisitions, right? So this is a whole new world. Do they want to diversify? Do they just want to buy endemic things? This is a bit of a departure, because Millerworld is a comic publisher. It has merchandise deals. It sells toys. So this is getting into a whole world of things that are different than Netflix's core business. That's interesting if they're going to keep doing that. But then there's also the question of, do they also keep contracting with Marvel to continue to make Marvel stuff? Or do they say, hey, we've got our own comics now, let's just dive into that? Or do they do both?
It depends on the exclusivity aspect of that deal for him personally as a dude.
Well, he owns Millerworld. So Kick-Ass, Kingsman, all of that stuff, he owns it. Anything that he hasn't already licensed to other people would be fair game for Netflix.
I just meant in the hiring him as the, you know, guy that comes up with all the cool ideas. Is he able to sign deals with Marvel and everybody else, or does this deal specifically preclude?
Oh yeah, is Netflix going to lock him? I mean, I don't know. Netflix is the new boss of Millerworld. I think before Miller made that decision, but who makes that call now?
Well, and maybe if you're a juggernaut of Netflix, and keep in mind, this is wild, uninformed speculation at this point, but just between the properties of Kick-Ass and Kingsman and the back catalog of Millerworld, that means you're buying two at-bats to make shows or additional movies or something out of existing franchises that have some kind of value, and a whole bunch of at-bats on smaller properties that could be the next, you know, AMC's Preacher or something.
This is a smaller version of Disney buying Marvel, frankly.
There's 0% chance that Kingsman specifically was a part of that deal, because that's already licensed out in an existing contract. I mean, Netflix now makes money off that.
That's what's really interesting there, right?
Because now they're the ones getting paid.
I don't know how those deals are structured.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, assuming that Millerworld gets money for the Kingsman movies for the license, right?
Netflix
now has whatever money that is.
So that's
But Netflix has no creative control over it, is my point.
Right.
Sure.
Right. Same as Sony owning X-Men when Disney bought Marvel.
Yeah.
What just got me, though, was the idea of, oh, what if Marvel comes to Mark Miller, says, hey, Mark, we'd love to have you work on another series for us. And Netflix is like, great. We'll let our employee Mark Miller do that for you as long as you make a TV show out of it for Netflix.
And I don't know that that would, if that is how it goes, I don't think I would have any problem with that. I think that would be a fine way to do that. But of course, the big unusual thing is Netflix just purchasing a revenue generating property like this. Like, I think you nailed it, Tom, is that it's the existing maturity of this that is the weird part, or the unusual part, the surprising part, because, you know, we've seen Netflix make a bunch of big gambles on speculative properties, some of which have paid off really well, some have not. But this is the first time we've ever seen them just straight up buy a blue chip content stock, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, yeah, you know, yeah, an existing, we're buying it, we're going to take the dividends, and that's great.
They haven't bought much of anything before. And it makes me, and Mikey, I'm curious where your head's at on this, because it makes me think, well, what if the next old man Logan is, instead of being turned into Logan the movie, is turned into a Netflix picture? Now, granted, again, the rights to Logan were already sold there, sure, but, you know, theoretically that could happen.
Well, it's what's interesting to me, and I think makes this all sort of make sense, is Netflix already has Marvel shows on there. They already have a deal with Marvel. So there's nothing precluding them from, and I can imagine incentivizing Mark Miller, if I were him, the ability to actually take some swings at some bigger stuff that isn't his, or he just wants to do his own properties. I mean, there's so many directions this can go. And I hope it's not Nemesis, even though I know that's one they got. I don't like that comic. It's really mean.
You got your first request in, Netflix. Don't do Nemesis. At least not first.
It's just like the murder show that's chauvinistic. Yay. It's like, okay, well.
Well, hey, everybody, we're just going to have to wait and see what Netflix does with that. But in the meantime, right, we will keep you up to date on all kinds of other things regarding your cord-killing options, your ability to watch TV and movies. And it's all because you support us directly at patreon.com/cordkillers.
Yeah, man. Patreon.com/cordkillers. That's how you keep us loud, live, and independent. You changed our lives nearly 4 years ago, I'm told, recently. I was at a get-together, and somebody mentioned it had been 3.5 years. I can't remember when that was. But thank you to every single one of you guys that are making this happen for us.
And we still want to do the Spoiler in Time project, which allows us to break up our old Spoiler in Times by show, by movie, so they're easier to access. Where do we stand with that? We need to get to 1850, I think. Is that the right number?
Yeah, and we're at 1697. So what is that?
153.
We just started a new month, right? Which means...
Yeah, so yeah, that always knocks the number down for a while.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, if you're one of those people that's on the fence and you're like, oh, what do I matter? It matters. It matters. It matters. $1 per episode, you will never, ever notice it on your credit card bill. Meanwhile, you will be fundamentally helping us build a sustainable production studio that can make all these dreams come true for us.
It's that old saying, Brian, a moment on the bill, a lifetime in your heart.
Love that saying. My it's mom used to say that to me.
There was the other thing my grandpa used to say, how to watch.
That's weird. was English not his first language?
No, he spoke perfect English. I never understood
Okay.
Plex took its live TV and DVR service out of beta Wednesday and expanded the features to Apple TV and Android apps. So it's no longer beta, and you can get it on more devices. Plex also added the ability to pause, rewind, and fast forward live television, so it works just like a DVR. Features available for subscribers to the Plex Pass service, which is around $5 a month, and you have to have a compatible TV tuner. But remember, they expanded the number that work with them a while back, so you've got lots of options there as well.
So have you had anybody pull that move where it's as though they're a member of an exclusive club and they're cool for letting you? They're like, I'm friends with so-and-so and he gave me his Plex login. So, you know, if you want.
Yeah, I have had that. We're like, hey, I'm just going to email you a Plex login.
Well, and by the way, this is perfectly legal, right? Because no two people are consuming the same content at the same time, right?
I mean, I don't know. It's such a question, right? If you have ripped a DVD, was that legal? Or did you circumvent copyright protection? Once you have that DVD, when you share the login, are you rebroadcasting? Or is it just looking at your server? It's so much of a gray area there.
I remember I was talking to someone in Hollywood who will go nameless, but they worked at a big major studio about this specific thing, and they were explaining the rules. Did you know it is illegal to actually have people over to watch a movie they don't own? In their eyes, they're explaining this like you actually have to write in and get express.
That's
consent.
Actually been tested in court. As long as you and there's no rule, but as long as you're not doing it for money and it's a limited number of people in your house, it's considered fair use. But your friend is not wrong that it is a violation of copyright. You just have the right to violate copyright in certain instances of that.
I was looking at it from a pragmatic human perspective, like unenforceable at best. And they were even talking about like, well, what if we turn on one of the cameras in your room? Like, what if Xbox uses the Kinect to determine how many people are in the room? I'm like, if you go down this path, you will lose money.
Yeah.
That is the reality. Like, you cannot attack your user base for things that we've just, I mean, that's just what we do. We share movies and TV. And there are obviously, we're finding new limits to that with logins. God, I can't tell you, having an HBO Go subscription, how many people are like, hey, can I borrow that?
Can I put it on my Plex server?
Well, by the letter of the law, that's roughly the equivalent. When we were kids, there were times I did not have cable television, and I would say to a friend, "Hey, can I come over? Rocky III is going to be on tonight. Can I come over and watch at your place?" Like never licensed, never paid, never did anything.
Well, okay, but in the eyes of the law, the judge would look at that and say, you going to your friend's house is a fair use. Yeah, it's technically a violation, but it's a fair use. You sharing a login, though, maybe not fair use,
but,
right?
But again,
the problem with copyright law is it's all up to the judge to determine what's fair and what's not, with sometimes no precedent.
I guess that's the exciting difference, is that sharing a login on someone's HBO Go account or whatever is definitely like – that is HBO's property, HBO's servers, HBO's everything. When you agree to a subscription fee, you get your login and your password, and a condition of that is don't give it out or whatever. Plex is different. That's your data that you legally captured on your server.
Or is it your data? I mean, that's the whole question anymore, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or are you just licensing that data?
This got
for your
big
own personal
real
use.
Quick.
Yeah. Welcome to Cord Killers.
Jesus.
Yeah. Well, regardless, it's great that Plex is just getting better and better. That seems like the game.
So
to
with
me.
Your legal over-the-air broadcast that only you watch for your personal use, that Plex DVR service is fantastic. Actually, and this is a really good feature update for folks who use Plex. It makes it easier for folks to use Plex instead of external devices that they might have to. You can use it as that thing where you plug it in one room with an antenna, and then you can access it anywhere in the world.
I think where you're going to find the easiest place to draw the line lawfully there, which they're actually going to prosecute, is what are you putting on your Plex server? If you rip a bunch of TV shows and put them up, you're probably okay. If you're torrenting those files and there's a record of that, you're in deeper hot water, I think.
Definitely.
Trackable hot water.
CBS All Access is adding its 24/7 CBS News service. CBS News was a free separate app, and it still is, but now CBS All Access folks will be able to get it right within the app. So that starts August 3rd. It'll eventually be added to all the apps, but it's starting with the web version of CBS All Access. CBS also announced it plans to bring a version of CBS All Access International, starting with Canada next year. Odd part of that is they licensed Star Trek Discovery to Netflix everywhere outside the U.S., so the new CBS All Access outside the U.S. won't have one of its flagship shows. CBS is also planning a live sports service. It didn't give many details on that. And sports-focused streaming service Fubo TV will add the CBS Sports Network and several, I'm sorry, the CBS News Network and several other CBS channels to its service. I didn't even know about Fubo TV, but if you're like, I need to have the local sports channels and a bunch of national ones and maybe some international sports, you might want to take a look at that. It starts at $35 a month. DirecTV Now also struck a deal to include CBS and its networks, including the CW, Showtime, CBS Sports, and Pop on the DirecTV Now service.
I am not, in general, very bullish on CBS's counterintuitive play of going it alone and instead of bundling up with Hulu like the other broadcast networks and stuff, instead trying to be its own Netflix kind of situation. But the addition of an international version of it is highly intriguing to me because when I was a kid, I lived overseas, and I know that the international market, at least when I was a kid, was accustomed to the idea of American content showing up later in their country. And so the idea that a lot of this stuff could, I don't know. I think CBS International could be successful in a way that I don't believe CBS Domestic will.
Can we just call this app what it is, and it's the Star Trek app? Like,
well, unless you're a Good Wife fan.
What?
If you're a Good Wife fan, it's the Good Wife app.
Yeah, but there's so many. Like, I think the people that are consuming existing CBS shows are going to continue, you know, getting them in that way. This is the only way to get started.
Oh, no, there's a Good Wife spinoff that is only available on CBS All Access.
Well, and oh, they added the Good Fight to CBS. What are you doing?
Yes, exactly. Well, and on top of that, before even this announcement happened, internationally, they've already auctioned off, Star Trek Discovery to Netflix International. So you won't even be able to watch it on there.
But here's the thing, guys. All of your criticisms make perfect sense. CBS just had their earnings. They were through the roof. They're making so much money on licensing their content because Les Moonves' strategy has always been, we control the content. We provide our own services through our channels and our apps, but we also license it out. So even though they don't license all their content to Hulu, they do have CBS on the Hulu Live TV service, and they do have the back catalog of CBS stuff like the old Star Treks on Hulu, but they also have the old CBS stuff on Netflix. They don't do exclusives. And so the fact that they're saying, we'll put it everywhere, is paying off for them.
So that's interesting. So maybe whether or not CBS, what's it called, CBS Now?
CBS All Access?
CBS All Access. Like it could be that that's never intended to be a smash hit. It's always intended to be a seventh or eighth most popular online service. But the mere existence of it fundamentally changes their leveraging position for everything. You think?
They're raking it in. Go ahead.
Yeah.
It bugs me. It bugs me a lot watching them move content around like that. It doesn't respect the people that are making the art.
This is the messy time, though, where nobody has agreed how this new system is supposed to work. Sure, and so we look at something like Netflix and we're like, oh, like that. Make it work like that. But then CBS does it a different way. And then Hulu does it a different way. And we're like, well, the Hulu way is closer to the one I like. And so, yeah, right. It's just going to take a while for everybody to figure out that's the one. That's the one that works.
I just wish it wasn't attached to Star Trek. So I have like an emotional anger connection to that because it's like, don't make me jump through hoops.
Well, we've talked about on the show, it really bums me out that the only Star Trek Discovery episode that will, like, that's the part that annoys me the most, is that they're going to have a big pilot premiere and then yank it, or what will feel like yank it from television to go put it behind the paywall.
I mean, you could buy it and just have it without commercials, or you can pay the $6 a month to get it with commercials.
Are they releasing the episodes as they air for purchase?
Yeah.
Because then I'm fine.
Yeah, then I'm fine too.
I am assuming they are, but we'll see.
Yeah, because if that's the case, then I'll experience it the same way I experience Better Call Saul and a bunch of
It would be like CBS to do that because they're like, we make more money if you buy it alone than if you buy CBS All Access. Well, as long as we're making money, that's all we care about.
If it's just a straight up $20 on Amazon for a Star Trek Discovery, then in.
Yeah. for sure.
Even if you will pay more to do that than subscribing to CBS All Access, you'll do it for the convenience, right?
Oh yeah, no. Having those commercials
and whatever they're tracking
out,
me with,
and also having a party held accountable to remind me of what's in my library. I love that about the whole Amazon thing.
All right, let's move on to talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
Not like real estate, it's all about location.
Under Surveillance.
What Happened to Monday is the name of an indie film that Netflix picked up at the Toronto International Film Festival, and it arrives on Netflix August 18th. The story is about seven sisters, each named for the days of the week, who in a near-future dystopian society with a strict one-child policy are forced to share one identity. So there's a girl for Monday, Tuesday, you get it. Stars Noomi Rapace and Willem Dafoe. It was directed by Tommy Wirkola, who also did the Dead Snow movie.
Well, on paper, this looked, forgive me, it looked to me pretty dumb. And then I watched the trailer, and I got, like, I don't know, made me really excited. This is all the same actress playing all the roles, like Orphan Black, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in. I'll watch it.
I saw this trailer the other day, and I was like, this goes one of two ways. It's horrible. And no, because the premise is weird, and like you can take a weird premise and make a great thing if you take it seriously and they ground it. And Noomi Rapace is very gifted as an actress, so I hope it's awesome. But yeah, it's super silly.
What happened to Monday? I don't know.
There's seven kids, and we named it for the days of the week, and that's why it's what it's like. Okay,
but also on paper, Snowpiercer was a garbage idea.
Was Dead Snow, not Snowpiercer, right?
No. I'm saying like on paper, Snowpiercer didn't look like a very engaging idea to me, but I found the movie very compelling, and this could be a very silly idea that could be very compelling.
We mentioned Dead Snow at the end of that press release there, and I was like, that's not giving me confidence for what this needs to be, I think.
Yeah.
Hey, I know you guys are so excited about all CBS All Access having original shows that you'll be super excited that CBS announced three new series for CBS All Access at the TV Critics Association press tour. Strange Angel, produced by Ridley Scott, based on the book by George Pendle, has Jack Parsons practicing rocketry by day and being a performer of sex magic rituals and a disciple to occultist Aleister Crowley by night, I would presume, or maybe all the time.
You lost me at sex magic there a little bit.
Is it because we spelled it with a K?
No. I mean, I don't know. That seems like an interesting side flavor to add on to something. It's the core. Well, I don't know. Maybe rocketry is cool.
I don't know. I don't know the book. I do know Ridley Scott, so I'm cautiously optimistic.
Hold on. Can we talk about your cautious optimism? Can we just talk about Ridley Scott? Can we talk about the movies that Ridley Scott
did?
Not as a person, not as a talent, not in any way to disparage or to cast shadows on all of his previous talents, as a brand name, as a knee-jerk, I will automatically love this because it has this name associated with it. It's kind of dead to me. Like, I hear Ridley Scott, and I don't instantly think going to be great.
Yeah.
But people...
My remark was not going to be great. My remark was, well, it's got Ridley Scott, so maybe it's not bad.
It's the only thing
I recognize out of all of these names.
Am I alone on this, Mikey? I feel like
you're saying Ridley Scott means gonna be bad, is what it sounds
no,
like.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying there was a time that, like, there are certain names.
You're reacting to something that I wasn't saying, but you hear other people say, oh, well, it's Ridley Scott, it must be good.
Correct. And that's no longer the knee-jerk. There was a time that was the knee-jerk response. I don't know that I'm there anymore.
How about you, Mikey?
Yeah, it depends on what, like, how much of a producer is he, insofar that is he touching the scripts at all? Because that doesn't make me feel great. Because his movies have had script problems for a few movies now, and a TV show, you got to really extend out and tell a story we can all sink our teeth into. But even though I think, like, The Martian was beautifully executed, it really cut down on character stuff from the book, especially. But I mean, look at any of the last two Alien movies.
Yeah. No, you could look at Prometheus. You can look at The Man in the High Castle, though, and you get different reads. So, yeah, I think we're all kind of around the same part, which is like Ridley Scott. Not bad. Not automatically good.
Would it be fair to say bruised? Like there was a time his reputation was immaculate. And I would say it's just a little rough.
You don't
want to
say tarnished, right? You don't want to go that far. Is that what you say?
Yeah.
Bruised?
Well, bruised can be healed, right? Yeah. I've had a bruise before.
I like it.
Was not attractive.
Yeah, you can cut the bruise out of an apple.
Talk about Robin Hood. That was a great remake, Ridley.
How about we've got two other CBS shows here. $1 is the name of the second show. It is a mystery/thriller that focuses on the role of a single dollar bill connecting people involved in a shocking multiple murder.
I don't know. Sounds like I think I saw that episode of The Twilight Zone.
I wrote that exact script in college. Literally that exact script.
I believe it.
As written by Mikey Newman. Interesting.
No, then it has a chance of being good.
Finally, No Activity is the name of the third show, based on an Australian series that celebrates the mundane against the backdrop of a high-stakes sting operation/drug bust, produced by Will Ferrell, Adam McKay, and Funny or Die.
Right on. Now that is one unbruised apple in my book.
Will Ferrell?
Yeah.
That Funny or Die?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
Those are two pristine-looking apples so far. GeekExchange.com says it has two separate sources who say Wrath of Khan director Nicholas Meyer is working on a second Star Trek series for CBS, presumably for CBS All Access, centered on Khan. The limited series would supposedly follow Khan on SETI Alpha 5 after being left there by the Enterprise in the original series.
That groan was real.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the thing. On the one hand, I can't. Mikey, what do you think?
I know how they handled Khan in the movie, so sounds like a dud.
Okay. I keep wanting to believe. Okay. I don't mind stories being retold. I don't mind new
not being
interpretations.
Retold. It's telling a part of the story we never heard.
Sure. And that's how you know Hercules stories were in pre-written.
Well,
this is
like Fargo.
Oh, you know how to now that's some sizzle on that steak there, Tom.
It's not from the Fargo dude, though.
Okay,
I'd watch that show. That sounds amazing.
What if just flat out from the beginning and forever, just Khan was portrayed as a hero, a genuine hero who made the kind of hard decisions and was a great leader that was exactly what these people needed. And you know at some point he turns evil down the road, but meanwhile, it is a heroic, admirable journey of somebody who values his crew more than his own life and makes survival happen? ? I don't know.
You point me to the show where somebody does a prequel of a bad guy story that ends up very bad, and we see the fall from grace and ultimately becomes a villain at the end. You show me where that has worked in all of entertainment. And I will nod my head no, because it never works. It's not satisfying to an audience.
How about a little gem called The Bible? Number one bestseller of all time? Take that, QED.
Better Call Saul?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Point to the Bible part where we actually see the angels fall from grace to become the devil.
It's implied. It's
not in there, homeboy.
That's fine.
They knew better. They knew if they told that backstory, people would tune out.
My point, I think you're right about Better Call Saul, though, Tom. I think that if they could do it with Better Call Saul, maybe they could do it with Khan. That'd be fun.
I mean, my thing is, okay, Nicholas Meyer, I like The Wrath of Khan, and Voyage Home was okay. I thought it was a little silly. You've got a mixed bag, in my opinion. Interesting to say, let's follow the period that we don't know about between the original series and the movie. It's not a concept that's bad. It's not a concept that's obviously good. I have no idea what you're going to do there. Like you say, is it Khan being a good guy and breaking bad, breaking Khan? Is it Khan lording it over people and keeping them from revolting? Do they visit other planets? I just don't know.
I don't know either. All I do know is that this just smells like every other Hollywood safe play where it's like, well, there's room to be creative and good, but at least it's a bankable existing story that we can convince our investors is worth putting money into.
It reeks so much of The Mummy. You know, when they did the whole dark expanded universe, they're trying to make expanded universes out of things that generally weren't.
I think that's even better than Brian's criticism to me. Yeah. Because bankable things can work really well. Better Call Saul is an example. Fargo is an example, right? But they don't always work. And that's a really good reason why this wouldn't work, because making a prequel out of a beloved character is different than making a side, trying to make an expanded side universe, which Marvel's done really well, but not everybody does it.
It complicates the feeling in the viewer to me is what you are correct. Better Call Saul is actually the one version of that that is currently working. We haven't seen the end, so we don't know.
Right.
But that is ultimately going to make us feel bad because we like Jimmy and then we know where he has to end up. So outside of being in the hands of the most brilliant TV writer ever, Vince Gilligan, I'm guessing that this is not that. Like, if Vince Gilligan wants to make a con show, here's the keys, knock yourself out.
And that's where it goes back to what you were saying, Brian, where it's like the network isn't approving this because they love the talent and the story. It's because it's a safe idea.
Yep.
Yeah, Vince Gilligan had an idea for Better Call Saul, and he was like, this is stupid. Everyone thinks this isn't going to work. And that's why it worked, because it shouldn't have.
Netflix is making some original anime now. Sword Guy is a modern-day fantasy about a boy who fuses with a demonic sword. Baki is based on the manga, a 26-episode series about a mixed martial arts fighter who dukes it out with death row inmates. Be the Beginning, from Production IG, that's the Ghost in the Shell company, follows an investigator on the case of a serial killer who could be part of a wider criminal organization. My Hero Academia is an ICO incarnation set in the near future, features a dangerous artificial life form secured behind a restricted zone, and Knights of the Zodiac, Saint Seiya, revives the 80s show starring a team of heroes who don magical armor that matches the designs of the constellation. Netflix is also dropping a crop of licensed originals shortly after they air in Japan.
So I'm going to ask this question. Maybe Mikey knows, but if I was going to guess, I would guess that Bryce would know. Mm-hmm. Is this straight up a case of Netflix just getting wind of how much money Crunchyroll's making and deciding that's a market we can crush?
Well, they already did that with Castlevania, and I think that surpassed their expectations by a lot.
So now they're just doubling down on all that?
Well, and Netflix...
That's kind of the reason, yeah.
Netflix has said that they want to get more into Japan. That's why we've seen things like Terrace House, two different series of Terrace House come out. Like, this is not terribly surprising, and this isn't the first anime from Netflix either, but I think I think if they continue, they can be a competitor to Crunchyroll or Funimation, which just got bought by Sony. Also, I think a correction, I think that show was just called Ico Incarnate. My Hero Academia is another separate show.
Calling the half-court Steph Curry shot right now, Netflix is going to buy Crunchyroll. That's where this ends.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, wouldn't that be wild? Wow.
It would.
Okay. Yeah.
Because we're gonna see the conglomerates, wow, words, continue to eat up smaller companies. You see Disney, Marvel, everyone's doing it. And... yeah, all the big things are just going to get.
So that's a good called shot for sure.
All right. Yeah. No, thanks, Bryce, for the correction on My Academia and Ico. It's My Hero Academia.
It's from the production.
Is the
company.
People who made AICO Incarnation, which is the one set in the near future with an artificial life form. So they are doing another My Hero Academia that. Was my confusion.
Which is good because
all right, YouTube Red outbid Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, and AMC for the rights to Cobra Kai, a Karate Kid sequel series set 30 years after the events of the original movie. Danny LaRusso, played by Ralph Macchio, and Johnny Lawrence, played by William Zabka, will open competing karate schools, and hilarity is expected to ensue.
Have you seen that music video, Sweep the Leg, where they're riffing on all this stuff? It's a music video. Apparently, the guy who played the blonde headed jerk in all of the teen movies when I was a kid, who plays
William Zabka?
Yeah, William Zabka. If I remember the story correctly, I believe he directed the video and plays in it. And he plays himself as a doughy guy sitting watching reruns of it over and over and over again, and you don't even recognize him as the guy until he decides to get fit back into character or whatever. I think in principle it's a fine blank canvas to project something onto, but I suspect it got picked up because of the canvas, not because of the talents of the artist.
I think this might have worked on Netflix. I don't think this is going to work on YouTube Red.
Okay, look, you just nailed it. I'm racist against YouTube Red. There, I said it.
It skews so much younger. I mean, look at the demographics. It's so skewed young.
Yep.
Those people weren't even alive.
I agree, and I'm ashamed to admit that I was bummed. Like, if it was a different studio, I would feel better about it, but I don't, and I'm...
Well, this is what Suzanne Daniels at YouTube is trying to do, right? She got Josh Held from Hot Tub Hot Time Machine and John Hurwitz and Hayden Schlossberg, who wrote Harold and Kumar, to write a really funny Karate Kid series that she got Ralph Macchio and William Zabka to be in, thinking, all right, this will pull them in. This will bring them over. We've got plenty of Good Mythical Morning originals going on for the people already here. We need something to make Brian Brushwood come over here and watch it.
It can happen. It can happen. If it's funny and clever and just right, then I could go for it. But
no, she called me and said, how do I get Brian to watch it?
Yeah,
I
was great.
I don't know. I'd make a Karate Kid remake.
That was the wrong answer. The right answer was get the Modern Rogue on YouTube Red. That's how you get Brian Brushwood on.
You hear that, Suzanne Daniels? Finally, The Walking Dead's Glenn Mazzara will run the Dark Tower series. The TV series version will tell the origins of Roland the Gunslinger and will apparently be independent of the new movie.
That seems like a smart move.
Is that right? Did you watch The Dark Tower yesterday instead of me, who didn't because I was having too much fun rewatching Game of Thrones with my wife?
It's very bad.
Okay, we're going to talk about this later on, but I have a weird question. Is there there was a brief racial earthquake when it was announced that Idris Elba was going to play the gunslinger? Would there be a aftershock of that if they picked a different ethnicity to play young Roland or other version of Roland or whatever? Like just as the original gunslinger was written as a light skinned person.
That's your first question?
Well, yeah, it is. Because okay. At this point, it's up is down, left is right, black is white. I got nothing, you know? It's a weird...
My first question would be, God, can we make sure it's independent of the new movie and just start over again,
hey,
please?
Man,
thank
you.
Which is the fastest way to draw that divide is to recast the ethnicity of the person.
Well,
which sucks that we're in that
position. You could get another black actor to play young Roland and just still be independent, right? Or you could get a Hispanic kid to play. It doesn't even have to involve that controversy at all.
But my question is, that certainly will play into the decisions they make with casting. And my question is, which way is the gravitational pull now? Because originally there was only one body of work with a light-skinned Roland, and then they fought that gravitational pull and made a dark-skinned Roland. So the question is, which is the stronger gravitational pull now when you book or when you get somebody on this?
Unquestionably, Idris Elba. Like, recasting from him, I think, makes them look bad, regardless.
Yeah, I agree.
Of that.
I agree as well. I think
the, right. The question is, can you get Idris Elba involved in the TV show after this movie?
He Doubtful. Looked great. Like, that costume design and his representation.
He seemed to
of
really
Roland.
Enjoy it. I mean, I saw some of the junket stuff, and he was talking about how he was playing with the guns all the time and just having a great time, trying to figure out the moves. So maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Somebody in the chat says he said he's hated the movie. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah. What else have you been watching, Brian, besides The Dark Tower, which we'll also talk about on Spoiler in Time?
Okay. So I did watch The Dark Tower. We'll talk about that in Spoiler in Time, and I'll just give general impressions when we do. Of course, watching Firefly as we have. Finished up Ozark. Hot damn, is Ozark maybe my favorite television show of the year. I can't think of another one I love more. I finished it and immediately started watching it again. It embodies my favorite parts of Vic Mackey from The Shield, but repackaged in a awesome twisted. He has the same superpower, but is a different, more likable iteration. Hot damn, is Ozark good? So good. Watch Rick and Morty and Voltron season 3 just launched. My kid kicked in the door at 6 in the morning this morning to tell me. And so we watched the first episode of that, and it's good. It's great. It's a really fun, you could say simple, but I would say well-executed show.
Mikey, what have you been watching?
Most of the stuff on your list, like Rick and Morty and Game of Thrones, obviously. I haven't watched Ozark yet, though I do consider it a canonical sequel to Arrested Development. What happened to Michael Bluth. Yeah, I've been working. I've been like,
you've been
bad.
Watching movies with Mikey is what you've been watching.
Well, I've been watching a lot of YouTube. I am working on the new movies of Mikey for Pan's Labyrinth right now, and it's coming along pretty good. Watch a lot of movies, obviously. Watch Pan's Labyrinth like 4 times. That's not easy. That is a sad movie.
Do you?
Gilmo.
When you keep going back to... by the way, at the Dark Tower, I saw the preview for the new Guillermo del Toro movie with the mute lady that falls in love with a fish. That looks pretty good. But when you go back to rewatch each of those movies, do you sit down with like a different lens each time? This time I'm going to look for this aspect or.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, not every time. A lot of times I'm just looking for details I can talk about, and then I'm doing research in the background. Then I just kind of let it play over. So I kind of memorize the entire movie, which is really helpful for editing, 'cause I can go to any scene and pull it out pretty quick. But yeah, it's a lot of different things. When I'm editing, I'll watch the show from the perspective of different people. Kind of like when a director tweets it, I will literally go watch it immediately and be like, all right, pretend this is the first episode I saw. Are you pissed off? Which is just sort of how I try to guess where people are going to land, you know? Yeah, you just end up watching movies too much. That's...
I've been watching a lot of the same things we mentioned so far: Preacher, Firefly, Game of Thrones, Rick and Morty. But I also, because my wife got into the early access, was able to see the first 4 episodes of The Defenders coming soon from Netflix. Ooh. And it is good.
Wait.
I liked it a lot. I don't think you're going to like it, Brian.
Oh, that was my question. I wanted to propose a new rating scale on a scale of Iron Fist to Daredevil. Where does it rank?
Yeah, because on my personal scale, I'd call it great. Not amazing. Not better than good. It is great. And
but better than Iron Fist.
I also really liked Jessica Jones, which I know Brian did not enjoy as much.
Oh, I liked Jessica Jones is a close second. It's a second place. It goes Daredevil season 1, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist.
I don't know. When I was watching these 4, I was like, this is the thing I love about Jessica Jones. And if I recall correctly, this is the thing Brian didn't like about Jessica Jones.
All right,
they're not
right
showing
on.
As much of the things he did like about her. Luke Cage is great. Daredevil is interesting because, not to get too spoilery, but he's in a different position than he is in the 2 series because of the way the series ended up. And so he's not really being Daredevil the way we've gotten used to him. So that is the most interesting of the 4 storylines that are being interwoven. There is minimal Iron Fist, but there is Iron Fist. I feel that it is much more tolerable than the Iron Fist that I endured watching. And also the fighting seems like it's better too that he does. But there's some really cool things where Iron Fist and Luke Cage team up, and Luke Cage sort of criticizes Iron Fist for all the things that we criticized Iron Fist for, which is hilarious.
That's amazing.
There's a little bit of self-awareness there. And the other thing they did, which I thought was really cool, is when they're just showing a particular hero, or they're in the neighborhood of the hero in the Iron Fist situation, for instance. Luke Cage is there, but it's in the Iron Fist neighborhood. They shoot it in the color palette and style of that series. So when you're in the Luke Cage neighborhood, you get that washed out 70s feel. You get a little bit of funky music in the background. When you're Jessica Jones, it's that dark, noir, purplish kind of tone that you had. Daredevil is that straight, gritty, I don't even know what
sodium arc orange or whatever. Yeah.
And so I thought that was fun because at least I noticed that in the first two episodes, they're starting to bring these characters together in a way, and I felt the way they brought them together was pretty natural too.
Right on.
I'm excited. I was gonna say tweet us with the hashtag bearable iron fist or minimal iron fist. That's what it was. I just thought that was really funny. It's like right of the Defenders from Netflix with minimal iron fist. Like, is that how you sell that show? Good on you, Netflix.
Fortified with iron fist. Okay, let's see what we should be on the lookout for, Bryce.
Hey, Ken sent along a recommendation. Thank you, Ken. He writes, you should check out the Amazon Prime series, Patriot. It's about a depressed CIA agent who needs to become an employee at an industrial pipe company in order to stop Iran from going nuclear. It's very hard to pin down what genre it is, but quirky comedy drama is in the ballpark. It has a very Wes Anderson vibe to it and worth checking out if you like his stuff. They recently announced they are working on season two. Thank you for sending that along, Ken. I watched the first episode of this today, and yeah, it basically follows a CIA agent who goes undercover as a non-official. He goes to work as an employee for a private company to work for the CIA's interests, and it's a mix of like Jason Bourne international action and a little bit of just slight wacky comedy, just a little bit of humor on top. It looks pretty cool. I'll probably check
Minimal
it out.
Minimal Iron Fist.
Hey, even less Iron Fist than Iron Fist.
Oh, I'm watching it now.
Yeah. So that's Patriot on Amazon Video, which you can watch for free if you have an Amazon Prime subscription.
Hey, folks, if you got something we should be on the lookout for, email it to us right now. Do it before you forget. Cordkillers@gmail.com. Hey, from time to time, Brian and I have to do something besides Cord Killers to make ends meet, and we like to tell you about some of those things on the show.
Heck yeah, man. As always, continuing to work on the modern Rogue as it grows and builds, and we've hit this new phase where people who are fans of Hacking the System are discovering the channel, and they're confused. They're all like, oh, your show, I loved it, and then it was gone, and now I've discovered you're here. This is amazing. And we're learning everything from Brazilian jiu-jitsu to how to stunt drive cars, how to make stuff blow up, how to duplicate a key from a photo. Basically, all the stuff that was too dangerous, too hot for TV. That's what the modern Rogue is. Please, 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 if you haven't watched it, check it out. And do me a favor. Let's all start making a game of sharing the new episodes as soon as they come out, because early momentum matters a lot for the YouTube algorithm to spread the word. So whether it's whatever your favorite social network is, please put out the word the moment that you see a new episode that you like.
Go subscribe, share. Now to the front lines.
Front lines!
FX announced a deal with Comcast to offer its own commercial-free streaming version of FX programming called FX Plus. It'll launch on September 5th for $6 a month. Services like AMC's only available to Comcast subscribers who are already paying for FX or AMC. It will have current shows along with a select back catalog. If you recall, AMC soft launched their version of this called AMC Premiere on Comcast back in June.
Mikey, are you as excited as everyone else to pay for an additional service on top of your cable fee free?
Sure, I'm not. I was actually just thinking about whoever is the first to give a sort of all-encompassing service that automatically signs you up for all that shit and takes a little fee. I'm there.
I think it's called,
I don't want to deal with any of this.
I think it's called cable. I think what you're describing
I
is
I have cable. You shouldn't even have me on your show.
No, that's the brilliance of this. Is now you can sign up for something that you have to have cable for that is on your cable bill, but a different service than cable.
but also provides the exact same content.
No, not exact. Doesn't have the commercials.
That's true. Meanwhile, in code leaked for the Apple HomePod smart speaker, there were references to 4K and HDR support for an upcoming version of the Apple TV. The code mentions support for Dolby Vision, HDR10, and hybrid log gamma.
Work with every 4K TV, I guess.
Yeah. Hey, Mikey, are you in love with HDR or 4K?
I haven't experienced much of it. I would be curious to watch, because like in games, it's amazing. Like when you play any of the PlayStation 4 Pro stuff, it's jaw dropping. But that lends itself to the interactive experience. I haven't actually watched a movie in HDR yet. I'm curious,
Tom,
what that looks like.
You got an HDR television. You've had a bit to sit on it now. Love it or?
I watched John Wick 2 in HDR the other day on our TV, and it looked great. I've watched some 4K stuff, and definitely it's like, oh, yeah, that's higher resolution. HDR really, because it's the colors that it's working on, really makes stuff pop. So, yeah, it can make a big difference. I watched Man in the High Castle in HDR. And it was better, but it was mostly because of the resolution. That's not one where the colors made it pop quite as much, though.
You're like, man in the High Castle, it went all the way from gray to a different shade of gray. Well, something.
It was honestly those really dark scenes in HD where you're like, ooh, I can't quite make everything out. You can make everything out when it's in 4K HDR.
Oh, that's nice.
Charter,
I feel
is
like
expected
the,
to make
the Hobbit re-releases are going to be great in HDR.
Yeah, HDR, yeah.
Unlike
will that
the
make
movies.
Them finally great?
No, it'll just make them look nicer because they look great. They just aren't fun to watch.
Charter is expected to make Netflix available through its set-top boxes, joining 13 top U.S. pay television operators that sell Netflix on top of your cable subscription now.
I got to tell you, I would not have expected it to take 12 people beating them to the punch before they jumped in on that. But good on them. Meanwhile, Amazon outbids Sky TV for the UK rights to tennis's ATP World Tour for the next 5 years. The deal includes ATP World Tour Masters 1000 and Masters 500 events.
Yeah, this only matters to people who are really into tennis, but the fact that they outbid Sky is kind of impressive.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's a lot of
that's huge.
Yeah. And Vizio began updating its P and M series Google Cast enabled TVs with a UI. They didn't have that. Now the SmartCast UI will bring back the ability to navigate to apps rather than relying entirely on your mobile device, as if you had just a Chromecast plugged in.
Wow.
Time for some dispatches from the front. Longtime listener B-Lissa writes in and says, "Hey, Tom and Brian, I was fascinated by your comments about how Amazon wants to become a movie distributor while Netflix is doing things to make itself unpopular with big movie companies, big theater companies particularly. I noticed something interesting the other day. I was looking at a list of the most read Kindle books. Almost every title is a book that's been or is being made into a movie or a TV show. Handmaid's Tale, Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, Ready Player One, Stephen King's It, American Gods, one of the Dark Tower books, and number two was the new book by Michael Conley, who is the author of the books the Amazon original show Bosch is based on. The book that's at number two is not from the Harry Bosch series, FYI, just his latest book with different characters. Seems like Amazon is mining their user data to get hints about what types of content will be popular."
This is I'm sure that Netflix has access to similar data if they want to pay for the rights to it. But as an organic way, there's got to be some big data slaughterhouse happening right now. Like people figuring out like this is poised to do really, really well with this demographic if it's released in this window based on the sales data of other stuff. That's the whole aspect that I hadn't really considered. When it comes to Amazon, do you think there's any merit to that technique, Mikey, of making art, of figuring out what's poised to do well based on demographics and sales data?
I watched you ask if there was any merit, and Tom just perked up like he was going to get the pun version of the question. It was nice. I got the merit question.
I hear my name when I pay attention.
I don't understand exactly what is going on here.
Well, so the question is whether or not Amazon is in a unique position to take advantage of its current Kindle book sales information in order to figure out what a upcoming hit might be based on it. Can you mine big data to find latent blockbuster art waiting to be made?
Yeah, you can.
Or is it the other way around, right? Is it the tail wagging the dog?
Well, it's both the quality of what it is. Like, it'll get you started, but you can't just phone it in the rest of the way. And that's why so many big properties keep falling flat on their face. You can guess that there will be an audience waiting for you when you get there to launch a thing. But if that thing is the Dark Tower, for example,
right,
they're not going to stick with you for very long.
So here's my real question, I guess, is does Amazon have a tangible advantage as a result of having its complete access to all of its data of what Kindle stories, not just at the macro level, but like these micro hits, you know, these 99-cent singles that are blowing up here or there? Could it be that?
Because it's a huge market out there right now to buy rights to books. It's always been a big market, but right now it is ridiculously huge because of things like Game of Thrones and The Martian.
Yeah. But I wonder, because when you're trying to make money more than the book, for example, like The Martian is a great example, because how many people bought books versus how many people saw that movie?
Sure.
By some huge metric, more saw the movie. So I think it gives you a hint, but you need to know if there's going to be crossover potential, because it'll send you on the way to get people to look. Like, when a book is popular and makes a movie, people go, oh, I want to look at that. And the marketing from there will carry it. And I think they actually did a good job marketing the Dark Tower. I just don't think that the last step of actually having a good movie was there.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it works the other way too. If on Amazon Prime Video, there's a little bit of pressure to say, hey, we can sell a lot of Kindle books if you promote this series that we have the rights to. So I'm not talking about originals here. I'm talking about other things like Game of Thrones that you can buy through the Amazon store. When they had the HBO rights to that in Amazon Prime Video, you know, pump Game of Thrones up there, get people to watch it, because then they'll want to buy the books from George R. R. Martin.
Sure.
You are very correct there. Like synergizing the marketing post releasing that content and making the books like have no effort to, I mean, they just show up on your Amazon list if you watch Game of Thrones, and that will be very rewarding for them, sort of in a reverse marketed kind of way.
Had a couple people send in this news. Brian writes us saying, unfortunately, Simple.tv is shutting down, and because everything runs through their servers, my device is going to be bricked on the 5th. I figured it would be happening sooner rather than later. Ever since their service outage and database crash in 2015, we always liked the system because we could locate the box near our attic-mounted antenna and use the signal throughout the house without running a bunch of wire, and could watch our home broadcast channels when traveling. We haven't had traditional cable since we bought a Simple TV with a lifetime subscription in 2013, so we probably got our money's worth. It's just a bummer that we need to research and spend the money on a replacement now. What's your recommendation on that, Tom?
Have you heard of Plex?
Yeah, I know a guy who's got a login.
Yeah. No, you should look at Plex. Maybe the HD Home Run stuff might be for you. There's also Tableau that's still out there and doing well and making up new versions of their products. If you want something that's very much like Simple TV, frankly, I feel like Channel Master and a good over the air antenna. Like maybe even a Channel Master flat antenna is a good enough pairing, although it doesn't get you all of that throughout the house stuff that Simple TV and Tableau get you.
Yep. Do we feel at all weird that a company offered a lifetime subscription and the people that bought that only got 4 years?
I mean, it was the lifetime of the device.
Yeah,
they didn't say whose lifetime it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Finally, Tyler wrote in and said, hey, Brian and Tom, I decided to become a patron again because of the Spoiler in Time library show pick. I've wanted to watch Firefly, but never got around to it. I tried to watch it once with my wife, but about 20 minutes in, she decided that it was a show I'd have to watch on my own time. I also tried to watch it with a buddy of mine, but he didn't want to watch a show that didn't get a proper ending. Now I can watch it with you all and not have to worry that my geek reputation will be called into question. Your boss again, Tyler.
Yeah, dude.
Real quick, though, Tyler's friend Firefly did have a proper ending. You do have to watch the movie to get it, but they did have a very proper ending.
Agreed.
Yeah.
That like absolutely tied up that show. So
on the wind. Yeah.
You will be satisfied at the end of it. It's a great show. You should watch it.
Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Mikey Newman. Folks, if you are like, I'm tired of all the negativity around reviews, but then I don't want some Pollyanna dumb person reviewing stuff, Movies with Mikey is for you. It is exactly that. Smart, intelligent reviews that aren't just crapping on stuff because that's fun.
By the way, unrelatedly, my new series, Pollyanna Dumb Person Reviews, coming out next week. Get ready.
I've been very excited.
I really liked it.
I don't know. I'm optimistic about a Dark Tower sequel. I think it'll be great. It'll be great.
Just real quick, while I'm here, we did actually just launch a second channel, Chainsaw Suit Games. If you're looking for game content, I do VG release list every week, which runs down the video games of the week. Stage of Development is a Russ Pitts produced documentary show that's very, very good. Port Center.
Wait,
is about,
you got Russ's documentary on there? That's awesome. I go back with Russ Pitts to the Half Price Books days in the 90s. So I'm super excited about that. That's great.
And the last show is Hierarch, Chris Straub's new show. I'm on it. I helped shoot it and direct the pilot. It's a very Christopher Guest-like mockumentary version of a game studio run by someone who has absolutely no idea how to make a game.
That's awesome.
Fantastic. Go check it out. You can follow him on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeyFace. That's MikeyFace, if you didn't know how to spell face. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will talk to you next week.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you could gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go
with you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.